I'm Mike McCurdy. Attorneys in the Kirk Zimmerman murder trial are back in court on Thursday. They continue skirmishing over what will be allowed in evidence at the trial. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Pantograph reporter Edith Brady Lunny to update the case that began in 2014 with the killing of financial advisor Pam Zimmerman in her East Washington Street office. 3 years, and we're still waiting to find out when it will be ready for trial.
Last month at a hearing, Judge Scott Drzeski told both sides he would like to be ready to set a trial date at the next hearing, which will be later this week. The exact scheduling of a trial date has not really been any topic of conversation so far through all of these months and months turning into years of motions.
And we still have motions yet to deal with. What are some of them?
The state recently filed in a motion disclosing what they would like to introduce as what's called other crimes evidence, meaning things that are negative, could be considered another crime that the defendant has committed. And so now the defense, the other side, will come back and try to argue why those things should not be introduced as evidence. And they include things like the fact that police found a small amount of marijuana in Zimmerman's car when he was arrested. This is not anything that's been publicly disclosed before now. So they will try to introduce that. And there are several other things about his behavior while he was going through his divorce that could be considered a crime, such as standing outside his former wife's window. They will try to get all of those things introduced to try to heap on bad information and put him in an even worse light with the jury.
Would the marijuana really achieve that function, or is that just one small drop of paint on the matter?
Well, when you're trying to build what's largely a circumstantial case, every little stick counts that you can throw into the fire and try to build heat in front of a jury.
There was also some talk of Kirk Zimmerman making a trip to Indiana to purchase a firearm, allegedly. Where does that stand regarding admissibility?
According to the defense, they've done some investigating on it, and they say that there's really nothing to it, that the police came back empty-handed when they tried to build some information on that. The state says that they have evidence that he went to Indiana and that he purchased a gun from a certain individual, or at least inquired about buying a gun from a certain individual.
Which is it?
Well, the problem is they've never found a gun. And both sides say they have information to prove their claim on this. So the defense is saying that the state has no information to nail it down, to say that Kirk Zimmerman actually made a trip and bought a gun from an individual there who had a gun for sale that would match the type of weapon used. So it's really going to come down to whether the judge is going to let that information in or not as to whether the jury will hear it. And without anything definitive, both sides are going to be making suggestions, and the jury could be left with weighing the credibility of what each side is saying.
How often does something like that get in when it's important to establish opportunity because Zimmerman didn't otherwise have a record of owning a firearm, and yet it's not directly conclusive piece of testimony on either side?
And that's where a judge's rulings are the most important, because the judge will determine what information will be coming in front of the jury. It doesn't mean necessarily that it will be admitted at the trial, but it does mean that it crosses the first threshold to get into the trial. So that's where the judge will have to decide. And Judge Drzeski has tried to narrow down the information that this jury will have in front of them. And a lot of that dealt with the statements that police collected from more than a dozen people about the Zimmermans and what the Zimmermans said to and about each other. And the judge has narrowed that information down to pretty much only information that dealt with child support payments and was made in very close proximity to where she was killed. And that has really tied one hand behind the state's back when it comes to trying to build their circumstantial case that these two really did not like one another. And it took away a lot of the sticks out of their pile that they wanted to use to build this very hot circumstantial case. The state, of course, is coming back and asking the judge to reconsider that, some of those pretrial rulings. But without something extremely new to offer, judges generally don't change their mind about their rulings on pretrial motions.
Do we know yet whether there will be a motion to try to move the trial?
There has not been one filed yet, but that is something that could be coming if the judge sets a trial date or tries to set one, even if it's months out. That will give both sides something to work towards. You know, they'll have that trial date out there months ahead and then file motions and work backwards to try to meet that. And I think as you get closer to that date, you could see the defense try to get the trial moved to another location. But sometimes they will wait on the defense side for more publicity to be generated. And because that publicity is what they will try to use to say, my client can't get a fair trial here.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Edith Brady-Lunny, a reporter for the Pantograph, about the upcoming hearing in the Kirk Zimmerman murder trial. In any complex legal defense and prosecution case, money's an issue. It's expensive to pay for lawyers. Kirk Zimmerman has had a couple of requests, hasn't he? Where do those stand?
He has had two requests, and the first one was actually granted. His bond was started out at $5 million. It was reduced to $2 million, and he was able to post the 10% or $200,000 with the help of his former girlfriend, who contributed $50,000 to that bond. That is what allowed him in November of 2015 to be released from the jail. Recently, he has filed a new motion asking that $100,000 of that bond money be given back to him. And he says he needs that money in order to pay for experts. And experts are very expensive, and they have a specialty in areas that defense lawyers and, frankly, the state needs. But the state has more money accessible to it in order to pay experts. The defense is limited. So Kirk Zimmerman has come back and said, I need my $100,000 back in order to pay for experts, presumably experts on gunshot residue, and also on time of death. Those are the two areas.
So his effective bond then would be $100,000 instead of $200,000.
Exactly.
And have circumstances changed that much for a judge to say, okay, you're even less of a flight risk or at risk of committing another alleged crime than you were before to merit that reduction?
The dilemma for the judge is that if Kirk Zimmerman does not get the bond money returned and he cannot mount an adequate defense, that could certainly be something that would be brought up in an appeal. If he cannot hire what's needed in order to challenge the state's evidence, that could be a big problem. So that's what the judge is going to have to decide. Zimmerman, with the exception of one small infraction where he stopped at a fast food restaurant, I think, on the way home once while he was out on his ankle bracelet, really has not violated any terms of his bond. He's on home confinement. He can leave for legal and medical appointments only. So his lawyer is going to be arguing that he really has, there's really no reason to consider him a flight risk. He's been a pretty good monitored defendant. Those are the things that will have to be weighed. So when they have the hearing later this week, one of the issues that will be explored is, what money does he have access to?
Part of that bond money is, as you pointed out, belongs to his former girlfriend. Mm-hmm. At the time she proffered the money, she was his girlfriend. Does she need the money back? Does she have a claim on part of that money?
Well, her lawyer that she hired in order to challenge whether or not she had to turn over financial records told me that the money had been returned to her by Kirk Zimmerman's son, David. David had access to life insurance money from his mother. So he was free to return the money to Kate Arthur. What the state will be challenging is whether or not life insurance money is part of an estate. And at the time that the bond was first set in this case, the state asked the judge to prohibit Zimmerman from using any money, any financial gain from his former wife, the victim in this case, going towards bailing him out on bond. So this is a legal question I think that's going to have to be settled by Judge Drzeski, is whether or not life insurance is considered part of a person's estate.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Edith Brady Lunny, a reporter for the Pantograph, about the upcoming hearing in the Kirk Zimmerman murder trial. Does it really matter for Kirk Zimmerman's purposes? If his son is willing to use that money to repay Kate Arthur in the first place, would he also not be willing to use it to fund expert witness testimony?
Part of the information that I also was given by Scott Cording, who was Kate Arthur's lawyer, is that at one point last year, David Zimmerman did give his father $25,000 solely for the purpose of helping with his legal fees. So we know in at least one instance, he did give his dad money to help with legal fees. The question is whether or not Kirk Zimmerman can expect continuing generosity on the part of his son. But the state wants the court to be fully aware of all the potential sources that Kirk Zimmerman has from friends, family, or his own pots of money. What could he access to pay for experts without refunding half of his bond money?
And the answer, according to court disclosures, is not much more than this, right?
Exactly.
Pantograph reporter Edith Brady Lunny also tells GLT's Charlie Schlenker the trial may take 6 weeks when it does begin. Judges and attorneys prefer to avoid holiday periods, and there's more pre-trial action yet to come. Brady Lunny says an early estimate for the trial start date could be January.